pieces in a puzzle, and we'll jump right into those steps. For the State Farm fire policies, there must be a suit seeking monetary relief alleging covered injury from an occurrence. And those steps must be triggered and present in the original pleadings, the Eight Corners rules that Eight Corners rule that I'm sure the court's familiar with. So let's start with the claim for damages against counter defendants. All of this is contained in the brief, of course, as Your Honor said, and I'll just hit them point by point. Two claims for damages made in this litigation against the Moores. The first being a claim under Louisiana Civil Code Article 1997 that State Farm's entitled to offset plaintiff's claim damages, any foreseeable or unforeseeable damages that ought to be awarded to plaintiffs. Your Honors will take note that the scope and language of this damage claim is not limited to an offset of only up to any damages that plaintiffs might recover. And in fact, in this litigation, plaintiffs recovered nothing. The second damage claim, and it's tied in with that last point, is a claim for liquidated damages under the contract, and this is from the State Farm counterclaim. Declaratory judgment that plaintiffs are not entitled to any contractual termination payments. Again, when you look at the language and scope of that claim, any termination payments could certainly include prospective payments that plaintiffs would be entitled to. In this instance, it would be Mr.
But how Moore. Are your client? How is your client being obligated to pay damages if the relief that the court granted was that he didn't receive any more money from his former contracting insurance company?
A great question. And the point I was alluding to in the language of the claim, in the counterclaim, was that for the breach, plaintiffs would not be entitled to any contractual term payments. Now, State Farm had previously made payments to Mr. Moore under this contractual termination provision. So one could see that he would no longer be entitled to prospective payments if found.
No, I understand that. Okay, so if I owe you money and I receive a declaration that I no longer owe you money, how does that legally obligate you to pay damages?
Well, and the second part of it is in the language of the counterclaim that he not be entitled to any contractual payments. So let's say he's been paid $1,000 in contractual term pay retroactively. Under the language of the counterclaim, if found liable in breach, Mr. Moore could well be obligated to pay back.
Did they ask for that? Did they ask for money back?
Based on the language of the counterclaim, and under all of the insurance case law that the court, I'm sure, is familiar with, one is not to recast or reinterpret or interpret.
And one is not to make up a pleading that isn't there. So my question is, did they ask for the money back?
They asked at trial that for breach that Mr. Moore prospectively be disallowed payment of his term pay.
So is there a pleading somewhere you can point us to where they're asking for money back? Where they're saying, we've already paid you $1,000, you should have to pay it back, as opposed to, we don't want to pay you $1,000 next week.
Well, I would point to the counterclaim itself, the amended counterclaim, where twice claim was made that plaintiffs are not entitled to any contractual payment. So, yes, you have the prospective disallowance, if found in breach, as well as under the language taken as written, that if found in breach, Mr. Moore would have to pay back.
Okay, but I'm sorry, counsel, but I don't want to argue with you. Is there an actual sentence in any of these counterclaims? Because I haven't seen it, and I may have missed it. I mean, okay. Seriously, that says you have to pay us back, or we seek a declaration that he has to pay us back what we've already paid him. Is that in there, as stated, and not inferred or thought or maybe?
Sure. Not in your exact words, but I would say that. The broadness of the claim in the counterclaim, as well as when you look back at the claim under 1997 for any foreseeable or unforeseeable damages that ought to be awarded. Now, that was urged as an offset, but there was no limitation in there saying we seek an offset only up to the amount the plaintiffs might be awarded. So State Farm has tried to have it both ways, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you, counsel, insofar as the declaratory judgment and termination payments are concerned, if we interpret the request that is before the court or was before the lower court only to apply to future termination payment obligations, if that's the way we errantly interpret it, do you agree that's not damages?
I would consider that a very clear form of liquidated damages. So I would answer yes.
You would say that you have that is a claim for damages. Court order that there'll be no future payments to be made. Under what definition of damages is applicable to here have you cited to us that would be damages?
I'm sorry?
What case law or interpretation have you given us that even that would be damages?
There's case law that's been cited a claim for liquidated damages based on covered property damage in a policy like the State Farm policy does in fact trigger the duty to defend.
Okay, but I think the question is, you have characterized this as a claim for liquidated damages, which respectfully is a mystery to me. I do not understand how my saying, I don't owe you any more money, is a claim for liquidated damages against you. I don't get that. And that's the part that I think Judge South was trying to get to, is where do you get that?
Well, if there's a provision built into a contract, and in this instance, the employment contract, whereby the person who drafts that contract says, if you do X, you are no longer entitled to my commitment to pay you Y. That is, in my view, and in case law that has been cited, a very clear provision for liquidated damages. Okay. In other words, Mr. Moore would have a contractual right to these payments under the contract, but that they would be terminated in the event such an event happens.
Counsel, even if we were to assume that the counterclaim and the offset are damage claims, how are they the type of damage claims that are subject to the policies? In other words, I was under the assumption that it has to be damages for bodily injury, property damage, personal injury, or advertising injury that are caused by an occurrence. And if occurrence is an accidental event or defined, even if these are claims for damages, how are they claims for the type of damages that are the subject of this type of coverage that we have under State Farm policies?
Right, and those are the required two additional.
But you're talking about breach of contract, right? How is that an occurrence as opposed to an accident or some kind of omission or negligence as opposed to a conscientious decision not to fulfill a contractual obligation? How is that an occurrence? As defined in these policies.
Okay. The allegations in the State Farm counterclaim assert intentional conduct and also asserts conduct that doesn't have an intentional element to it. So.
What conduct are you talking about there?
That doesn't have an intentional
element.
Okay. Mr. Moore's first filing into the public record of alleged confidential proprietary information belonging to State Farm. Now, that could have been a negligent act by Mr. Moore, particularly given the fact that he had the contractual right.
Yeah, but their claim wasn't that he negligently violated this contractual or his contractual duties or anything like that. That he just actually went out and did something that violated the contract. It seems to me that if you're correct about this type of claim being covered under these type of policies, then any disputes between the insured and the principal become subject of these type of policies.
Well, I would differ only in the instance where, let's say, for example, in this case, Under the employment contract, Mr. Moore at no time had the right to utilize the policyholder information that he did have a right to utilize while an agent. State Farm alleges that he converted, filed into the record information or used information intentionally without that right.
Well, if he breached it, if he breached this obligation, what difference would it make whether it was negligent or intentional?
Well, that
seems, you know what I'm saying? It just seems that if something violates this contract, it violates it whether it's intentional or not. An occurrence has to be some kind of accident. It can't be an intentional act.
Well, and that that goes back to your question as to an occurrence. If an action by Mr. Moore was taken that he either had the right to actually undertake, which is utilizing some of this policyholder information, or if he didn't have that right but believed he did, then that's a negligent act. And you look at the there's no definition of accident in the policy as to property damage, but as to personal injury and advertising injury, and you're asking about what types of things did he do. The allegations regarding inducing or advising policyholders to switch their coverage. Now, that to me very clearly would fall into the advertising injury, for example, in disparaging.
Okay, and how? How does that necessarily disparage? I mean, you could say, well, the Allstate policy is only $500 every 6 months, whereas the State Farm policy is $550. That's not a disparagement. That would be a truthful statement, assuming that it's truthful. So the simply advising or saying you should switch coverage, to me, does not imply disparagement of the other party. It could just be the policy's cheaper.
Right.
Could say the State Farm policy is an excellent, lovely policy. State Farm's an excellent, lovely company. However, if you want to save money, go to this other company.
And that may well be right, but I think that goes to the evidence. I think that's a factual issue. And when you look at
if you're examining the pleadings, again, we can't. While you have to have a liberal construction of the pleadings, I understand the eight corners rule. You can't just make something up and say, "Oh, because they switched policies, that means it was disparagement." Seems to me there has to be some sort of disparagement alleged. Then, even if that were false, it would be subject to a duty to defend. I understand that distinction very well.
Well, that also goes to the fact that a term like disparagement is not defined in the contract. I agree with the call from Mr. Moore. It might have been that, the insurance provided by my agency is just better or cheaper than State Farm's. Now, does that qualify as is he saying State Farm are mean, ugly people? No, but does he have to say that to qualify as disparagement? Under the contract, policy, there's no definition of that term. And again, I think if you look at it liberally, as you're required to do in the coverage context, that it may well fit within that rubric.
I mean, I think given the context of it being with slander and libel, it's just hard for me to say that any time you recommend a particular policy to someone that you're disparaging everybody else in the insurance industry. That seemed to be very broad. And while I understand we have a liberal construction, that seems sort of beyond liberal.
Well, I would think if the preceding terms were libel and slander, those are terms of art. We know the definition of those legally. But the inclusion of that third and last term, disparagement, which is really not a term of art, would be a liberally reading in the coverage context, something that could qualify if a agent, for example, convinced or said anything to convince a policyholder that his coverage, his company, his agency was better.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at it. It says oral or written publication of material that slanders or libels a person or organization or disparages a person's or organization's goods, products, or services. So it seems to be that they're using it in the technical sense that you really can't slander a product. Like, I can't slander these mints or something like that. But I could say that they're bad mints. And then that would be a disparagement. It doesn't seem to be suggesting that anything where you recommend a product to someone that you are automatically, and without any other allegation, disparaging. Because it would seem then that any case, as Judge Benavides was saying, between competing companies about anything could involve some hidden claim for disparagement that we divine by the fact that every company says they're the best.
Right. And that may well be, but I think again, based on the fact that you take, lost my train of thought there, that term is not defined, goes to the evidence and is a factual determination, so that on summary judgment, when Mr. Moore's claim for coverage was denied, in essence, the district court said there's no reasonable interpretation that would afford coverage in this case. I don't think that can be reconciled with the fact that there was no factual determination of was there disparagement, for example, under the advertising injury provision.
But, I mean, aren't you just looking at the pleadings under the eight quarters rules? Can you talk about coverage? But the fact is, as I understand it, was a zero verdict, so there's nothing really to indemnify. Aren't we just talking about the duty to defend at this point? Or is there something
right.
I'm missing?
No.
I know you've got your appeal, okay, but assuming right. everything stays as it is, there's no judgment to indemnify right now,
correct.
Is there?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So we're just about the duty to defend, so we're looking at the pleadings.
Well,
do the pleadings say you disparaged our products or you called us names?
Well, again, using terms of inducing or advising other policyholders to switch their coverage from State Farm to more, again, without a factual determination of whether there was disparagement, I can't definitively say that advising or inducing equates disparaging, but you certainly can't say that it doesn't or it couldn't. And in determining coverage, particularly on summary judgment, I don't think you can make that determination. Okay. And the rule as to the clock on the red is?
You're done.
You're done.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
But your colleague has rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. David?
Morning, judges. My name is Bob David. I represent American Home Assurance Company. My client issued an errors and omissions policy to the Jim Moore Insurance Agency to cover, in its insuring agreement, sums legally obligated to pay as damages for negligent acts, errors, and omissions in the process of rendering professional services to others as an insurance agent. We got brought into this lawsuit as a result of an effort by the appellants to get financing for its personal, long-standing, and unsuccessful war against State Farm over his contract and his agency relationship, an agency relationship that went very sour, as evidenced by the extensive pleadings in this case as well as others. The plaintiff's lawsuit is based on his contract and the breaches related to it, as well as a whole laundry list of other claims. State Farm, in turn, sought an injunction, filed a counterclaim and an amended counterclaim, none of which trigger coverage under my policy. Judge Eldon Fallon ruled three times in the lower court that there was no coverage and ruled very clearly on that. All of State Farm's claims relate to the appellant's unlawful conversion of State Farm's property, unlawful efforts to try and take clients, policyholders with them, and unlawful disclosure of information. My policy relates to negligent errors, acts, and omissions. State Farm does not allege negligence, contrary to the efforts in the appellant's brief to argue same. If you look, there was a question earlier about whether, or there was an assertion earlier that the disclosure in the courts may have been improper, have been negligent. But if you look clearly at State Farm's pleadings, it says, and I quote, that the appellants intentionally and recklessly disclosed in a, quote, malicious attempt, unquote, to disclose this information. The acts alleged are clearly intentional acts by State Farm.
What about this thing about filing the pleadings that contain trade secrets and so forth? You're saying that's not possibly a professional services, that's just potentially under advertising injury over on State Farm, and that didn't involve you or...
Well, the advertising injury exclusion does not apply.
No, that's the State Farm. I just said that.
Yeah.
You guys are the professional services.
Right.
I understand that.
So you're saying
that wouldn't be a professional service to file a pleading or whatnot?
Certainly not a professional service. Louisiana law has defined professional services, and it's professional services performed in the ordinary course of practice of profession. So it's not the ordinary course of practice of profession to be filing lawsuits against your agency on behalf of another pursuant to an agreement where compensation would be due. That's the Aker case cited in our brief, and it certainly doesn't fit within the Louisiana court's interpretation of professional services. The supplemental answer and counterclaim and the amended answer and counterclaim of State Farm contain a lot of the same allegations, and they all relate to intentional conversion of policies and information, printing out thousands and thousands of pages when the contract is getting ready to be terminated to take with him for his new employment, and other breaches. None of them are negligence claims.
So does your case rest on whether the word negligent modifies all three nouns, act, error, omission?
That is one element of my argument, yes, ma'am. Unlike the case cited by the plaintiffs in his brief, where the case he cited was the corporate realty case, in that case, the policy read error, omission, or negligent act. My policy reads negligent error, omission, or act. Big difference there, because negligent modifies all three words, unlike the case cited by the plaintiffs, where it only modified one. The plaintiff also makes some other allegations to try and allege negligence, for example, engaging in bootstrapping of the highest order. He alleges that he failed to properly inform himself about the coverages in the State Farm policies. That is about as self-serving a position as I've ever seen in coverage litigation, but it clearly is not professional services for others.
And he wants it for the negligence to himself.
Exactly.
Okay.
At no point, if you look at the pleadings, did State Farm allege that the appellant negligently performed services for other policyholders, which is what my policy covers.
Well, what about this inducing them to change policies when maybe that wasn't in their best interest? Maybe he, you know, allowed his bad feelings to get the better of him, and he's advising people to switch coverage when they shouldn't.
He was obligated by contract to not induce those policyholders to leave. So the allegations are that he intentionally breached the contract.
But does that preclude that it was also negligence, that in fact he's advising people erroneously to switch coverage?
But that's not the allegation. The allegation is that he breached the contract by doing so. And the allegation is a breach of contract claim. It is not a negligent claim. It's not an intentional tort claim.
Well, I know this was in Texas, and I realize we're talking about Louisiana law, but there was a Lamar Holmes case that dealt with the fact that just calling it breach of contract or calling it negligence isn't dispositive of what it really is.
I don't think that's the case in Louisiana, Your Honor.
Okay. So you don't think they'd follow Lamar Holmes?
Well, this isn't a suit brought by a policyholder because he's claiming that he was given bad advice.
That's right.
In which case, that would trigger coverage.
This is a suit
wherein the insurance company is saying that this person breached the contract because of his behavior. It has to do with the relationship between those two parties and not his relationship as a provider of professional services to somebody else.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. I mean, that's what my policy is designed to ensure. You buy this insurance to protect yourself by claims from your policyholders alleging that you negligently advised them on the securing of insurance coverage. That is so far removed from what the allegations of this lawsuit is, which is a battle between State Farm and one of its agents over the termination of an employment agreement.
Well, you mentioned the allegations. Regardless of what was alleged, that's not their claim to be making anyway. You would not be covering, I mean, as Judge Benavides was saying, that coverage is for other individuals, regardless of what the allegation might be in this complaint.
I'm not sure I follow you.
Well, regardless of how it was alleged, whether it's alleged as negligent or otherwise, the real claim that could be made here by State Farm was an intentional act violation of their agreement with their agent. And if somebody has the claim that we're talking about, it's not the parties in this litigation.
Yes, sir. I believe most of my stuff, Your Honors, is covered in my brief.
Do you want to address the damages issue at all in light of the arguments that were made about the declaratory judgment really is a way of getting past money back?
Sure. Real quickly, if you look at starting with the terms of my policy, uses very simple words. We're not talking about some real complicated insurance policy where you've got to go to this page and that page. It's all in one paragraph. It talks about sums you're obligated to pay as damages, okay? It clearly signals that coverage is only money which must be paid, all right? This is not what, the plaintiffs have said 100 times in their brief and 1,000 times in the lower court that we're talking about liquidated damages. But liquidated damages appears nowhere except in the plaintiff's briefs, nowhere in the pleadings, okay? We are not talking about a situation. My policy does not say coverage is triggered when obligations may be offset or recovery may be lessened. Louisiana law defines damages, as stated in our brief, as pecuniary compensation. That is not what's at issue here. It's a as your judges recognized earlier, it's a very different situation where we have here, I'm not obligated to pay you anymore, is very different from you being obligated to pay me. It's a very, very simple principle, one that the appellants have continued to ignore. With that, we've distinguished the plaintiff's cases in our briefs. I don't see any need to really go any further, but what we have here is just a strained effort to enlarge the provisions of my client's policy far beyond what was reasonably contemplated. Thank you.
Mr. Buck. Sorry about that. Pronouncing your name incorrectly, Mr. DeVete.
Thomas Buck on behalf of State Farm Fire and Casualty Company. As I was going down my points, I think either Mr. David or the court has hit them exactly on the nail on the head. The pleadings never claimed disparagement, and they never claimed negligence.
I think this is an interesting point, though. To what extent do they have to? I mean, we know that labels don't control. If they didn't use the magic word disparagement, but they otherwise alleged it, that wouldn't save you. I know that's not what you're going to argue. So what about this idea that disparagement is sort of a broad, vague term that should be construed against the insurance company to include inducing others to go to different carriers?
Well, I think that's very simply answered by the fact that your mint example. You can disparage mints. You can say you don't like these mints all you want. That's just your opinion. And if he didn't have a contract with State Farm that obligated him to use his best efforts to promote our product and to sell it to people, he could say bad things about State Farm all day long. What he's got an obligation to do under the contract is to use best efforts to promote State Farm
products.
No,
and I understand that, but y'all didn't stop there. And the hard part here is you're the insurer and the litigant in the other case, in the underlying case, but separating them out, State Farm, the litigant, didn't stop at saying you didn't use your best efforts to sell State Farm policies. It said you also tried to get them to go to other carriers. And your opponent says that is an implied disparagement. And while I understand that may or may not be actionable, the advertising and personal injury components do involve disparagement. I mean, that is what your coverage doesn't necessarily, or duty to defend, rise or fall on whether, in fact, it doesn't rise or fall on whether there's actually a cause of action for whatever you're being sued about. It rises and falls on allegations and whether they match up to the policy, right?
I agree
with
that.
That's true in Louisiana and Texas. So, that being the case, if in fact he's saying necessarily by getting everyone to go from State Farm to Allstate or someone else, you have to disparage State Farm to do that. And so we should imply that in the pleading under the liberal construction eight corners rule.
I think that has crossed the border of the expansion of pleadings, and I think it's easily answered again. Even if you want to give them that, the only
how is
reason,
it caused by an occurrence?
Exactly. It wasn't,
how in the world is it caused by an occurrence?
It's a breach of the contract.
As defined by the policy and by Louisiana law.
That was going to be my point exactly. It's still a breach of the contract. And there's basically 5 points they've got to get to across before they come close to having a claim that could be covered. And that's, there's got to be the obligation to, quote, pay those sums that the insureds become legally obligated to pay. This is a claim for injunction and declaratory relief. There's never, I don't have to pay you, just like you said, I had written down, we don't have to pay you, can't possibly translate into you have to pay us.
Well, but he's got this creative argument about by saying never, ever,
ever, that that's an implied request for past damages.
But I don't think you can imply that in what was actually pled by State Farm. I think the State Farm lawyer that filed this was very careful to try to cast this all as contractual relief, not an accident. Declaratory judgment and injunction, not a request for anybody to pay anything. They were very careful to cast it as a claim for offset, not a claim for you to write me a check. And they were very careful to put it in the affirmative defenses. It was never a counterclaim for them to pay back. And the pay is just count one. It has to be damages. There's no damages. They have to arise out of an occurrence, which is an accident. They never pled any negligence. Everything's intentional. It all arises out of the contract, and contract's not accident. Number four, the one thing we didn't really talk about was that under 1997, Louisiana Civil Code Article 1997 is a contract code article. They are still firmly outside of the coverage for accidents when they talk about Article 1997 damages, because that's a contract claim. And then fifth, there is no bodily injury, nobody's bleeding, there's no property damage, nothing is broken. Even to get loss of use, you have to have actual damage to tangible physical property under my policy. There is no such thing. Just, again, stealing the customer lists and trying to use them to your own advantage is not an accident, and it's a violation of the contract. It's not a tort. And there's no property damage, personal injury, or advertising injury. My sense is that the courts understand my argument, and I think the 35 pages of decisions on these issues rendered by the lower court on several different occasions accurately and effectively set forth the position that this court should take in affirming the summary judgment.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you all very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Tom Thornhill. I tried this case, and the Court is right in observing that the case resulted in a draw of sorts, with neither the plaintiff nor the counterclaimants obtaining any money from one another. However, that is not what we are about here today. That case is on appeal and set for argument December the 3rd. We did try to get them together. We're unsuccessful. So you get to hear about insurance policies. And you get to hear about the law that deals with the allegations that were made in the pleadings. Those are the things that we all have to deal with. This case, in my opinion, is very simple. It does deal with obligations. And it does, in this case, deal with an annuity. Now, we can all recognize what an annuity is as issued by an insurance company. It is an obligation to pay money over time. In this case, there is a contractual obligation to pay money over time. That is the obligation which State Farm and its counterclaim seeks to terminate. It seeks to take back. If one owns the right to payment under an annuity and another seeks to take it from you, they seek to take property from you, and you are damaged. In my view, that is simple. That is simple. And one can say all day long that, oh, they're not writing you a check or you're not paying them. And you can say anything that you want to say about it and trying to characterize it as something other than taking money that is due as damages. And it is. Now, I heard very clearly the counsel for American Home articulately say that his policy provides for payment in the event there is a sum of money which one is obligated to pay as damages. And that, I submit to you, is the case under these facts, where the annuity that is claimed back, if you will, in this case,
okay,
is an
so
obligation.
You're not resting
to pay
on
damages.
This idea that the DJ is asking for money back. You're saying that the claim for future damages is somehow asking for the annuity back.
Absolutely.
I'm putting annuity in quotes because you're the one calling it that, and I'm not really sure I'm.
Because that's a legal term.
I think that's creative. I appreciate it. I'm not sure that's what I would call it, but that's fine. That's fine.
Submit to say, Your Honor, with all due respect, Judge Haynes, Jim Moore's company earned the right to these payments contractually, and it is not something that is due because he looked good. He earned it.
Okay, well, an annuity, normally you purchase and you don't have to be a good boy to get the money. Yes, you do. And so there is some ongoing obligation. So it's not exactly the same thing as some person in a personal injury case getting an annuity so that they'll be provided for in their future while they're injured and so on.
I appreciate the creativity in the argument. I really, really do. So I'm not, I don't mean to disrespect that. I just don't think it's the same thing. The reason why they're making the declaratory judgment claim they're making is because they're saying under the contract, if you run around and do X, Y, and Z, you don't get paid in the future. I'm not familiar with annuities providing for, you know, sort of a good behavior clause short of, you know, death and that kind of thing.
There are all kinds of annuities that have termination provisions in them that calls for penalties or liquidated damages. If you cash out your retirement annuity before the term, you suffer a penalty.
Yeah, but there's nothing that says I have to be good or I have to not go around doing this or that. It just, it's a term of the contract. I just don't see those as the same thing. I'm sorry. Maybe the other two judges do.
I understand, Judge Haynes. And I don't think being good is the characterization of whether or not someone under these facts, under the terms of the contract to which you point, has been good or bad. It simply deals with whether or not someone has competed. That's all. That's not good or bad. That's whether or not someone has engaged in a competing business.
It's conduct-based. It's not just you're sitting in your house getting annuity checks every month so long as you don't cash it out.
But the termination in other annuities, which leads to liquidated damages and penalties, is simply an act before the prescribed term that causes for the liquidated damages. And so I submit to you that there's a distinction that doesn't make a difference between what we're saying. We may be ships passing in a night, but I respectfully submit to you that what we're doing here is we're relying upon the claims that are being made by State Farm as a counterclaimant. Now, the things that we probably have not focused on clearly is that the State Farm claimants are not all the same as the State Farm obligors are under the contract. The contract sets out State Farm Life, State Farm accident policies, different kinds of companies within State Farm having the obligation based upon previous sales to make a payment that is established as of a certain time in a certain amount, no doubt about it. Now, the counterclaimants who have made the allegations and who assert facts, if you look beyond the conclusions of, well, this was a conversion or this was something done wrong, those who have the claims are people who claim the right to possess ownership of certain properties. Now, what did they claim? If you look beyond the conclusions, if you say, well, let's look beyond this being a breach of contract, what is the occurrence, Judge Benavides? The occurrence that they point to, and if you look at the pleading, I mean, I can go through the words, that he printed, he used certain information, he removed certain things, he didn't return certain things, and he disclosed certain information. Now, none of those speak to breaches of contract that were proven, but that is a different matter. Now, that's a coverage issue. There may ultimately be a coverage issue here. That's beside the point. The question now is whether or not there's a duty to defend. And in this case, we never really got to the coverage questions because we didn't get past the duty to defend. And in looking at the duty to defend, the eight corners rule, all of that which we have to look, looks at the face of the pleadings. And one can't say under these facts that the face of the pleadings clearly exclude all sets of facts which would give rise to coverage. That's our test. Do any, and it's the clear exclusion test, the clear exclusion test does not give safe harbor to either American Home or State Farm on their policies. I know I've run out of time. I would say to you that the offenses, the injuries that are referred to in this counterclaim, in light of the various policies, give rise to coverage. We respectfully ask for your consideration and your reversal on the summary judgment in light of your review. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sorensen. Take up